Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson, coming to you live from upstairs studio, and with me, Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
What are we talking about?
Well, after we hit stop, after we were recording with the last episode, the pressure and anxiety, I started to wonder if perhaps there was conversation to have about the fact that some of the pressure that we might be feeling is put on us by people who really, at the end of the day, have no business telling us what we should be doing and with twos, threes, fours, and fives, not because they're mean, bad, horrible people, but because they have, you know, multiple degrees perhaps in business administration and leadership scenarios, and that's all fine, well, and good, but at the end of the day, if you're not early childhood, you know, are we potentially, you know, bowing down to expectations from people who are totally off the map when it comes to what's appropriate with preschoolers?
I would argue there are plenty of people in early childhood who are also putting pressure on us to do bullshit shit.
I agree.
So
I agree.
Think that's part of it. You know,
yeah. I don't even know if this is an episode, but I was like, oh, I think I want to at least kick this around.
Well, okay, so why do we let all of that stuff get up inside of our head? Because I...
Because they're signing your check?
Well, nah. Who's signing my check?
I don't know. If I'm working, okay, it's all hypothetical, yeah. Right? So if I'm in the preschool and I'm in the 3-year-old classroom and my director is saying, okay, here's the list of the stuff that we need to start thinking about doing because they're going to kindergarten in a year and a half. And I, you know, if I don't have the wherewithal or the knowledge or the confidence to be like, where's this expectation coming from? There's a chance I might just say okay because I need to make this money. I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, you took the job, and I mean, yeah.
Well, sometimes, okay, so that brings up something too. So I've had conversations with people about how, you know, when you were interviewing, I like to think they laid their cards on the table programmatically. So if you were told, and this kind of goes back to that overselling and under-delivering, if during my interview you paint me a picture of this is play-based, and that's happened to me, right? Yes, play, developmentally appropriate, play, you know, yep, outside, woohoo! And so I accept the job based on what you've told me the program is, and then 2 weeks while I'm there, I realize this is not what the program is. That kind of pushback in conversation is different. Let's say perhaps they painted the play picture and it was a play program, and a year and a half after working there, they decide to become more readiness, quote unquote, oriented. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then I think there's room to be like, whoa, where is this coming from? We need to have a conversation. What led to this? Which is different than if they laid those cards on the table during the interview, like this is what's expected here, and you still took the job. That's where I get a little, I don't want to say impatient, but that's where my like empathy level goes down. Like if they have straight up said that circle time happens every day from 9:30 to 10, and you got to do letter of the day and the number of the day, da, 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 and inside your heart, you're like, well, that's a bunch of bullshit, but you take the job, you have no grounds to be complaining about your program because cards were on the table.
Yeah. And so part of our job
is to know what you believe in.
And then make sure you're getting the best view of everybody else's cards possible. And, I mean...
So it's like poker?
Looks like cheating at poker.
Playing with a marked deck.
I don't play a lot of poker, but I believe it's not
cheating is typically frowned upon.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a rule of the game that you can look at the other person's cards. But I think in conversation and job interviews, you can put in some effort to get a view of the other person's cards.
I agree.
And so I think that becomes, again, it goes back to, like we said in the last episode, it's on us. Mm-hmm. But I think beyond just our employers, I think we also find that pressure you mentioned from outsiders far beyond what's going on in the classrooms. I mean, there are people who are choosing not to use certain products in their classrooms or whatever it is, shaving cream or whatever it is, because they saw a YouTube video or whatever it is, or not doing activities with, I don't know, toilet paper tubes or plastic straws or any of that kind of stuff because way beyond the early learning field, whether it's in politics or social engineering or whatever's going on. And we often let ourselves get pressured by those things as well and build up a lot of anxiety.
And I think we can resist that pressure a little bit more effectively when we are clear on what we believe, which would be a lot better for the industry if everybody collectively working in the same program shared that philosophy. I mean, that would be ideal. The reality is that there might be varying degrees of, you know, philosophical alignment in a program. But I think speaking specifically to the individual listeners today, you know, if you have no idea what you stand for, oh my God, now I'm gonna sound like Hamilton. But I mean, what will you fall for? Sorry, Jeff. But if you don't know, then somebody with a big blustery voice is going to come in with a clipboard and a name tag and tell you that you can't do something. And if they scare you, the reality is that you might just say okay because of the position that they might have, as opposed to saying, sounds like you have an expectation, let's have a conversation about that, which takes time and confidence and a realization that perhaps what is being proposed to you might not be aligned with best practice.
And so a lot of this goes back to know thyself. I think that's a huge bit of it. So kind of an example of dealing with outside perspective and pressure and that kind of stuff. A little over a year ago, I decided I was going to kill my lawn. Because fundamentally, I'm just opposed to lawns and the time it takes and the noisy machines involved in maintaining them and all that kind of stuff. And so I replaced every blade of grass in the yard has been replaced with mulch and perennial plantings and maybe some annuals now and then and the occasional tomato plant. And I find it much more enjoyable myself to care for that than for the monoculture of lawns. It's my aesthetic. Now, would all of my neighbors Are all my neighbors cool with that? Don't give a fuck. Yeah. Didn't ask.
Because you wouldn't have changed it if they said yes.
Yeah, well, yeah. And the only neighbor I care about who is a Vietnamese immigrant who was a colonel in the South Vietnamese Army during the Vietnam War, who came to the United States with his sons, who worked in packing plants and at real hard work to pay cash for their house, and then he sent his kids off to medical school and engineering school, who I've talked to maybe 15 times in the last 25 years. Although his wife does make delicious egg rolls, and every once in a while he's showed up with egg rolls for me, he digs it because he comes over and borrows a little mulch now and then, and maybe a perennial or two that he can transplant into his yard, and then pays for it with egg rolls and a nice smile and wave now. And he's 1,000 years old, but he's the only neighbor I give a fuck about, and I would do what I did without him. But that's just who I am, and I'm getting old, it took a long time to get there, but a lot of times we don't do what we feel is us, and we feel a lot of pressure and anxiety to conform and fit into other people's structure of things, and I don't know, maybe that drives it way off topic, but I think, again, it all goes back to
Well, I think there's some shoulda, coulda's, and wouldas. You know, if you drink some of that Kool-Aid of thinking, well, I'm a teacher, so I should, and I could, and I would, and you might start convincing yourself that your shouldas and your coulda's and your wouldas, if you become your shouldas as opposed to really seeing what you bring to the table. I've been lately calling it the fishbowl syndrome, and I don't know if it's really a fishbowl syndrome, but you start to take on the characteristics and the things that are in your little fishbowly environment. And if that means that you're paired up with a teacher who has certain expectations, you might start to have those expectations even though you didn't really have those expectations.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We kind of become
like chameleon-ish.
What we surround ourselves
yeah.
with.
Yeah,
we
you
kind
do.
Of pick those things up.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, I find myself doing this. I listen to, there's some podcasts I listen to that I pick up some language from, some turns of phrase that I hadn't used before, where did that come from? And, oh, okay, I came mm-hmm. from listening to this. And I know for a fact that there are people that listen to the show that have started using some of the vocabulary that we use.
Lisa-isms, Jeff-isms.
Yeah, warm bodies and those kind of things. So that's part of this.
So far, Jeff, I would say, and we've recorded 4 episodes so far this morning, there has been a common denominator in all of them that does come back to self-awareness to some degree.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, maybe it's that we're becoming old-timers now. We're, do you feel comfortable in your own skin, Lisa Murphy?
I'm getting there. And yeah, and I just turned 50. So like all you 21-year-olds who are like going like, oh my God, like chill.
Exactly.
And follow-up question, the more comfortable in your own skin you feel, is there a correlation with your pressure and anxiety levels?
Probably. What I was going to say, though, is that the last few years has been the first time where I have had a little bit of a disconnect between I feel more like personal, like I'm feeling more confident and aligned in my personal life as opposed to, like, I like the connection between theory and practice with the work, mm-hmm. that's been like smooth, like that's been there. Like I'm always growing, I'm always reading more, I'm always stretching, want challenges, but I think I'm finally recalibrating, I'm coming to that same level of balance in my personal life. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah,
like there
yeah.
was some,
oh,
there
yeah.
was a little bit of a difference mm-hmm. there.
Absolutely.
And so comfortable in my own skin professionally, oh, I checked yes 1,000 times for the last 10 years. Personally, there were some years where I'd be like, probably no.
Yeah.
You know, not right now. Not yet. And I think I'm getting to that point. And some of it, I think, is getting a little bit older.
Uh-huh.
You know, and mm-hmm. finally feeling like the disequilibrium I had in my personal life for, like, I did the math the other day. It was like, there were like about 8 years where I was like a floundering fish. Not personally like in a bad way, but like there was a lot of disconnect in my personal life. And I think over the last couple of years, that's finally like, okay,
yeah.
Now we're coming back to a place of calm and center and recalibration.
Mrs. Johnson, same questions.
What was the question again? I got.
She was too busy listening.
I know.
The sing song.
We'll make it into one question. Do you find a correlation between how comfortable you, how true to yourself you are, to how your anxiety and feelings of pressure are? Meaning, if you feel comfortable in your own skin, do you feel those pressures and anxieties and
oh, definitely
things more,
yes.
Or do you feel
no?
What?
Well, again, like Lisa said, as I've gotten older, I feel more comfortable in my own skin and I'm more confident and I don't feel pressure and anxiety as much. Or if there is pressure and anxiety, I don't respond to it in the same
mm-hmm.
way.
Mm-hmm. Different, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, do I need to get worked up to it? Well, sometimes being female, too, the hormones get in there and, you know, mess you up a little bit. But overall, I feel better with myself.
I find that as I'm getting a little older, I have developed less fucks to give.
Like, well, I was just going to say that, yeah, maybe. Yeah,
yeah. I'm a little bit better at weighing, like, is this worth getting, like, all bent out of shape about? Like, at the end of the day, do I even really care about this? Do I got a dog in this fight? You know, and my brother and I, we joke about it. We share no more fucks to give memes daily. Like, that's my relationship right now with one of my brothers. And it's funny. Like, I'll find one. Like, that was always his MO. It's like, oh, I got no more fucks to give. You know, and which it's funny because, and not that the listeners care, but that's actually the complete opposite of my brother's true personality. Like, that's the crunchy coding. But
he gives all the fucks.
He inside, he would disagree if he was sitting right here. But it's a connection point for us, mm-hmm. you know, but he has a lot of fucks to give, but you know, he likes to send the message that he doesn't. And I think as I get older, I've just been getting good about better at like, do I really have a fuck to give about this? Yeah. Not because I'm a dick about, you know,
everything
but
well, my experience is that the more comfortable you get in your own skin and who you are, and I mean, there can be different tracks of that. There's professionally mm-hmm. and there's personally, of course. But the more there's correlation there between how comfortable you are in your own skin and good you are with yourself
oh, yeah.
compared to how much pressure and anxiety you feel out there in the world.
Yeah, it's one thing to be all like, oh, I don't care if anybody doesn't like my hair, and I don't care if anybody doesn't like the outfit I have on. And we can say that, but inside, if you're still like, oh,
yeah.
you know, then that tells you, that's to me, that's an indicator that you still got a little bit of lining up potentially to do in that department.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, that goes, and I get, I mean, again, that's correlation, not causation, and I'm sure, I mean, you could look it up and find reasons that this isn't true, but just anecdotally and personally, that's what my experience has been. And so again, that puts it all back on us, that the pressure and anxiety and whatever that we feel are ours to deal with. And so it's not going to change unless we're the ones that take the action and start moving that ball forward. Now, would it be nice if somebody come along and make those pressures and anxieties go away? Absolutely. But in Reelsville, that's probably pretty unlikely.
No, but we could, like, you could take ownership of it, the individual, right?
Yeah.
If I know that this certain situation is causing me a lot of pressure, stress, and anxiety, I can get my feet and get up and move. Now the repercussions of making that choice might be stressful for a while.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, we used to joke, okay, back when I was married, we used to joke that, you know, the person who has the problem is the person who should be on the couch, metaphorically, right? Like, if you're the one with the problem, then you need to go deal with the problem. But I don't need to go sleep on the couch because you're mad at me. You're the one mad. You go figure it out. And that you know, who's having the problem? Who's having the problem?
Yeah.
Who has the pressure on them right now?
Yeah, yeah. And so when you're feeling, I mean, this episode has been more about those pressures from beyond your program. Pressures from beyond. I mean, a lot of times, if you're feeling that, you're choosing to let those outside pressures influence you and cause you that anxiety for whatever reason. And I mean, there may be valid reasons for it, I guess.
I think also looking at the big pressures from beyond, I like how you said that. Sometimes that's a distraction tool. Like if I spend all of my time and energy worrying about what licensing says or doesn't say, then perhaps I'm giving myself a pass on having to deal with some of the internal stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
My own stuff, the stuff closer to home, so to speak.
Yeah, well, I've run into
avoidance.
People working this profession that get very worked up and stressed and anxious and frustrated and pressured, I guess, about issues like, let's say, recycling. And that becomes the whole focus of their early learning program. Are we doing enough? Are we recycling enough in the program? And am I spending enough time indoctrinating children to the importance of recycling? Or am I doing enough projects using recycled materials? And am I being environmentally friendly in everything we do? And there's nothing wrong with any of that if that's what you want to do. But I've seen situations where that takes away from
everything
the children
else.
And mm-hmm. everything else. And I mean, in my mind, the real job is those relationships and here and now with those little people. And the other stuff is kind of stuff you can salt and pepper into that environment. But a lot of times those outside things, whatever it is, take you away from the focus on the kids.
And then we lose our spot. Go back to when Mimi was talking about
yeah,
when you lose your spot, Your eye is no longer focused on what you need to be doing, and that's when we lose our balance and we fall down and we start wobbling because we've lost our spot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And so, I mean, if your whole focus becomes, this program needs to start composting, which, hey, I'm all 100% in favor of, but if that becomes your focus and it's not the children in the class.
Exactly. And you could plug in anything.
Oh, yeah.
You could say Eckers if you are now so overly focused on Eckers, or if you're so overly focused on making sure everybody has a bachelor's degree. If it causes you to lose your spot, it doesn't matter the level of good intention, it's still taking away and diluting the ultimate reason why we all show up every
day. Yeah. And I mean, I guess for some people that becomes that it, whether it's composting or Eckers, becomes the spot for people.
But then let's unpack that for a quick second. Then maybe that's an internal indicator that thank you for the 15 years you've put into early childhood, but if this particular issue is now firing you up so much, maybe that's some information that it's time for some kind of a change or a regroup or a recalibration in your own personal life.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean that if you develop a passion about something, you have to quit early childhood. But if it starts to detract you from your real reason of being here, that could be some information.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's why I left acting. I mean, I did that drift for a while. And I was like, you know, like hanging out with the kids that I was nannying with and hanging out with the children became more of a priority than learning my lines and showing up on time to rehearsal.
Yeah, that's a good indicator that might be time for a change.
That was mm-hmm. a fantastic indicator that it was time for a change.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, it's about time to wrap this up, and it's been two episodes.
It's time for a change.
Two episodes on pressure and anxiety, and I think we got to wrap up by saying, for some people, some of the time, this is a bigger thing that needs to be dealt with a professional. I mean, there are a lot of people that have crippling anxiety about things, but I think most listeners understand that that's a different thing than what we're talking about here, but I just want to throw that out.
And I'm glad that you said that. That kind of jumped in my head a couple of times, is that, you know, we're not in any way making light of...
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there are methods and tools for dealing with those things that are of course out there and not what this is about. I think what we're dealing with is more of that just day-to-day professional pressure and anxiety. And maybe this would have been a good conversation to have at the beginning of this two-part series, because people have already turned off and are hearing this. But, you know, when they message me to complain, I'll be able to play this little... So you should have kept listening. Now I feel pressured and anxious to do some editing on the show, but
no,
I'm not going to.
Not going to.
Hey, this has been the Child Care Byron Girl Podcast. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you sharing the show. OohEeGooEe.com for Lisa Murphy. ExplorationsEarlyLearning.com for Tasha and myself and Slinky Dog and Gigi Dog. Slinky and Gigi have been getting emails.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. They have only been spam emails because I set up email accounts for the dogs because they've both got professional roles, and so far all the only emails they've got has been spam. So if you'd like to email one of my dogs, you can go on one of those websites and find the email address.
You show them the plan and sell them essential oils.
Yeah. Back soon. Bye-bye.
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 This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.